Welcome, truth seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Once again, sitting in for Mike Malloy as he is on vacation for the rest of the week. Never fear, he will return Monday. So don't worry. You'll only have to put up with me for two more days, but I will make it worth your while. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, the citizen investigative journalist. Yes, you may have heard of me. Of course, I've been on Malloy's show many times. Have been guest hosting here all week from Los Angeles, K-Talk AM 1150, where we're, of course, dealing with the breaking news this evening. Boy, I'll tell you, tough day for those of us who grew up in the 70s. First, we had Farrah Fawcett, who died this morning of cancer at the age of 62. And I suspect just about every guy I know, just about every guy in the country my age had that famous poster of hers up in their bedroom. Tony, did you have that poster? You're too young, aren't you? Yeah, I had the poster. She died this morning from cancer at the age of 62, and of course, late this afternoon, just before airtime, stunning news, Michael Jackson dead at the age of 50. He was found this morning in his mansion, passed out. The cause of death right now is being described as a cardiac event. Don't know if it was a cardiac arrest. Exactly what it was. Information is still sketchy on that, on the exact cause of death. There was a press conference held not long ago out in Bel Air, where he was found originally. But we don't know too much yet about the cause of that death. We will, of course, keep our eyes on that and where and if there is any news above and beyond the fact that the King of Pop was stunningly found dead today. Where there is news, of course, we will bring it to you. But we don't need to spend the next 3 hours talking about that. I suspect all the other media in the world will be doing that. You don't need me for that. You don't need the independent, alternative, progressive media for that. You need us to tell you the stories that won't be covered everywhere else, and we will be doing that tonight. Coming up in this hour, I'm going to be joined by Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent, 9/11 whistleblower, Time Magazine's 2002 Person of the Year. She was the one who tried to warn the FBI about 9/11, about Zacharias Moussaoui and his plans, her concerns about the flight lessons he was taking. No one wanted to listen. Well, she also tried to let folks know about her concerns about the war in Iraq. And at that point, very few people wanted to listen. Well, particularly 60 Minutes, CBS 60 Minutes. She told her story. She told her concerns to them. They never aired it. She wrote about that today at BradBlog.com. You can check out her article on that, her story. But she'll tell you about it firsthand, first person. And if you'd like to have a question for Colleen Rowley, you can give us a call all night tonight, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Don't use Mike Malloy's regular 800 numbers because no one's going to answer. You have to call us here, 877-520-1150. Colleen is going to be with us here in the first hour, and so we will take your calls if you have questions for her, the great 9/11 whistleblower. She will be here also tonight. Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com will be joining us. Talk about progressive media in the age of Obama. Andrew Krieg is also going to talk, is going to be with us. Got a lot of folks tonight. Andrew Krieg is going to talk about a forum that's going to be held tomorrow in D.C. at the National Press Club. I'm told at this late hour it's going to be covered by C-SPAN, which is good news, at least for the folks who live on the East Coast, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. East Coast tomorrow. A forum with a bunch of folks, a bunch of groups, including John Conyers, by the way, is going to be there, calling on the Justice Department to bring an investigation on the political prosecutions that have been going on for the last 8 years out of the Department of Justice, the prosecutions against guys like Don Siegelman, Paul Miner, and too many others. Democrats were actually prosecuted at a rate of 7-1 during the Bush administration. I'm sure that's just because the Democrats were that bad that they had to be investigated, right? Yeah, I don't think so. So we're going to talk with Andrew Krieg about that. What else we have on the docket? Oh, yeah. Desi Doyen is going to be joining us. My lovely producer and co-host and the managing editor of the Green News Report, which is heard on a radio station near you that she and I do a couple times a week. And if it's not heard near you, what the hell is wrong with your radio station? We're gonna have the Green News Report later, and she's gonna stick around for a live version of the Green News Report. We're also gonna be joined at that time by Bob Kincaid from out in West Virginia, a radio host of Head On Radio, along with Lorella Scarborough, an activist out of West Virginia, where they have been holding increasingly heated protests against mountaintop removal by the big coal companies out there in West Virginia. Ain't nobody covering that one, frankly, and it's getting ugly out there. So we're going to talk about all of that and so much more here in this in these next 3 hours. I do hope you can stick with us throughout. A couple of news items I do want to hit real quickly before we bring on Colleen Raleigh after the break here. Speaking of investigations, Acorn. You all may have heard of Acorn if you watch Fox News. They're the folks who have been going around, Fox has been talking about them around the clock. They still are claiming they're committing voter fraud and all of this nonsense. Never mind, there's no evidence of that. Never mind that just last week, the head of the GOP's voter registration firm, a fellow by the name of Mark Anthony Jacoby of Young Political Majors, pled guilty to voter registration fraud. Yes, he himself, the head of the firm, hired by the California GOP out here and in at least three other states, pled guilty to voter registration fraud, and they are alleged to have changed the voter registrations from Democratic to Republican, which meant that thousands of voters went to the polls during the primaries last year and couldn't vote. Couldn't vote in the Democratic primary because their name had been changed to Republican, their registration. That's what this guy did. Now, the Acorn folks, by the way, have never, not only have not pled guilty, they have not been charged with this, with any sort of voter registration fraud or voter fraud, which is what you keep hearing. They were never charged because they didn't do it. Who did do some voter registration with Acorn? Well, a handful of their 13,000 employees did do it. And they were charged, and they were charged because Acorn turned them in. And if it wasn't for the fact that they turned them in, I don't know, they might have gotten away with it. But Acorn themselves were the ones who were defrauded here. This would be akin, when you hear folks out there telling you that Acorn is committing voter fraud, or even Acorn is committing voter registration fraud, this is like saying Walmart is committing theft when some of their employees steal something off the shelves. Yes, Walmart is a thief because of their employees that they turned in. It's absurd. Well, here we have today breaking news thanks to votersunite.org and my friend Ellen Tyson over there, who puts out the daily voting news every day. She brought my attention to this just before airtime tonight. Acorn has settled a voter registration lawsuit with the state of Missouri. They settled. That's good. Here's what you might want to notice right below the headline. The state of Missouri agreed Thursday to pay $450,000 to Acorn to help settle a voter registration lawsuit that Acorn filed last year. As it turns out, Missouri was not following the motor voter law. They weren't properly registering voters. They were supposed to register voters, low income and disabled people, when they go to visit social services offices under the motor voter law. The state of Missouri was not doing that, so Acorn filed a suit in April of 2008, alleging that the state wasn't meeting their obligations under the law. 3 months later, a federal judge ordered the state to begin taking concrete steps to help its clients register to vote. And since then, the state has taken extraordinary steps to comply with the federal law, said John Greenbaum, legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, which represented Acorn. The lawsuit has led to a 2,000% increase in the number of people registering to vote at Missouri public assistance agencies, Greenbaum said. We appreciate that since they've been under court order. Missouri's Department of Social Services has been a national model in showing how to implement this law. It has, voter registration has increased 2,000%. Democracy has increased 2,000%. Thanks to Acorn. Thank you, Acorn. No wonder Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and all the other Republican liars out there want to put Acorn out of business. They're promoting democracy. And when people vote, guess what happens? Republicans lose elections. All right, well, a lot of folks know me because of the work I do in election integrity, election reform. If I have some time today, I do need to beat up on the New York Times, who out and out got it wrong, who just put out, I'll run this real quick. They were talking about a new election reform bill that is has been introduced by Congressman Rush Holt out of New Jersey. And they said in an editorial on Monday that endorsed his bill. They said, quote, Mr. Holt's bill would require paper ballots to be used for every vote cast in November 2010. That, my friends, is a complete and utter error. I was going to call it a lie, but I don't know if they knew better. If they didn't know better, they sure as hell should have. They're the paper of record. Get it right. His bill will not require paper ballots until 2014. So we're talking three more federal elections, including one presidential. Until then, we can use the same crappy electronic touchscreen machines that don't work, that are 100% unverifiable. And the New York Times should know better. Well, they do now, because I've told them. I told them at Brad Blog. I sent them a letter. I told them they need to correct this. So far, here are we Thursday, right? They have yet to correct their editorial from Monday. All they got to do is read his bill. I did it. It don't require paper ballots by November 2010. Stop misleading, New York Times. Thank you. Brad Friedman here on The Molloy Show. We'll be right back with Colleen Raleigh, your calls, and a whole hell of a lot more on The Mike Molloy Show. To the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. We are, of course, monitoring the situation with Michael Jackson, dead tonight at the age of 50 from a cardiac event of some type out here in Los Angeles from where I'm broadcasting. And if there is any additional news, I promise you, we are monitoring that, and we will bring it to you as it breaks. Moving on now to my first guest, Colleen Raleigh, formerly an FBI special agent and legal counsel for more than 20 years until retiring in 2004. Following 9/11, after blowing the whistle on failures at the FBI, which led up to the attacks of 9/11, she testified to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing both the agency and the intelligence community. In 2002, she was one of three whistleblowers named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. I couldn't be more delighted to have her here. And she's also, by the way, now a contributor to BradBlog.com. She has a terrific article today up about 60 Minutes and how they missed, as she describes it, how 60 Minutes missed the chance to yell at the naked emperor. Once again, Colleen Raleigh, when she was trying to raise the alarm, just as she tried to prior to 9/11, when she tried to raise the alarm about the war in Iraq, folks didn't listen to her. Well, will we ever learn? Welcome to the show, Colleen. How are you? Uh-oh, did I lose Colleen? Oh, great. Now all of a sudden I lost Colleen. You know why? Because I mentioned Michael Jackson, and she thought, oh, man, Michael Jackson, he died? I got to go look it up. All right, we got to get Colleen back on. I'll give you the background here on what she had to say today. Was that she had concerns about the war in Iraq. She had, of course, certain information because she worked at the FBI, and she tried to get that to the FBI director, Robert Mueller, who at the time had told her, following her 9/11 disclosures, that next time something comes up, please let me know about it, Colleen. She did let him know about it, but she didn't hear back right away. And I think we have Colleen back now, and we'll pick up the story there. Colleen, do we have you back?
Yes, you do.
Okay, good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
I don't know what you said about me just now, though, however.
Well, as soon as we lost you there, I don't know if you hung up on us or we hung up on you, but as soon as you weren't here anymore, I was bad-mouthing you like crazy, Colleen. You don't want to know. Don't check the archives later, okay?
That's okay. It's one of these, it goes with the nature of the job, I guess.
That's right. Well, actually, what I was doing was, first sort of catching folks up on who you are as the 9/11 FBI's 9/11 whistleblower, and on trying to sound the alarm again, as you did prior to the Iraq War, which you wrote about today at bradblog.com, and your experience with 60 Minutes. And we're not going to have time to get into that until after the break, so I'll just ask you very quickly. Following your testimony to the Senate about the problems with the FBI, were changes put in place, were reforms put in place that you are confident would keep something like 9/11 from happening again if there was a whistleblower out there like you setting off the alarm?
No, nothing really changed for the better. First of all, the 400-page report identifying, fully identifying the mistakes did not come out till the summer of 2004. Actually, well, it's 2003, the first IG investigation, but the 9/11 Commission report did not come out till the 2004.
Right.
So you had this long, lengthy investigation, of course, not even totally complete. And when they identified things, it was already way too late because the Bush administration had gone forward with its agenda, you know, including torture and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing, and they're launching the war in Iraq, that literally had nothing to do with the mistakes that had allowed and allowed it to happen in the first place. It was a time sequence problem in the first place because people could not admit these mistakes quickly. It took 3 years, and even then it was just a partial.
But what I know, and that's what I wonder. After that came out, were they able to make the changes? We'll get the answer to that after this break. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with 9/11 whistleblower Colleen Raleigh, taking your calls 877-520-1150. Much more with Colleen Raleigh straight ahead. Stay with us. Bush administration was, in order to get us into the war in Iraq. Colleen Raleigh, my guest, the FBI's 9/11 whistleblower, was trying to get the word out about those lies. And I think it's pretty clear now that they were lies if there weren't any questions about it back then. Colleen Raleigh joins me. We'll take your calls in a little bit at 877-520-1150. Joins me, I should say. I'm Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We are monitoring the Michael Jackson situation, dead at age 50. And there were so many cars around the UCLA Medical Center, they've actually airlifted him out, his body out to the coroner, as I understand. If I understand that story correctly, of course, the TV stations are now following the helicopter. Newsflash, that ain't news. All right, what is news is Colleen Raleigh. And Colleen, thanks, we still have... There we go. There we go. Now I got you back, Colleen. So we were talking before the break about the reforms at the FBI. It took 3 years for the 9/11 report to come out, not until 2004, the recommendations they made to the FBI. And at that point, when they made those recommendations for FBI reform, were they taken seriously, and did they make those reforms that were recommended?
Well, I think there's 41 recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and up until the 2006 election, a lot of them, almost none of them were followed. And then after the 2006 election, they did pass some legislation, but there's still a number of them that weren't followed. One is that they were going to have a civil liberties board, and Bush disbanded the board after the only Democrat that was appointed on there, I forget his name now, Lanny Davis was the guy, and after a year of finding out that their civil liberties, privacy and civil liberties board had no power to do anything, he actually resigned from it, and then Bush shortly thereafter kind of secretly disbanded the whole thing. There were three of the 41 recommendations were about making a privacy and civil liberties board, so that was kind of a big part of it, and it's never even happened as far as I know. I don't know now if Obama has reconstituted. It's not been in the news at all. So.
But surely there must have been something done. You were named Times Person of the Year in 2002. You got a lot of publicity. Surely there were changes that were put in place at the FBI directly that would have meant when someone like you was sending, and correct me if I understand this correctly, you're sending memos saying, hey, you have concerns about the Zacharias Moussaoui, but nobody was getting those messages or acting on them?
Actually, the so-called reforms that the Bush administration did have, again, they do not connect to the mistakes. One of the things the Bush administration did was they went around the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which prescribes a way to get a warrant for terrorists. And if we could have gotten that warrant back in August of 2001, it might have revealed things, whatever. The reason that warrant was denied had nothing to do with the law per se. And so, again, it's almost like the going to war in Iraq as a pretext. When you know the true facts and then you find out what they did as a response to 9/11, you see that it was just pretextual. It had nothing to do with the mistakes. So going around the law in order to have illegal warrantless monitoring had nothing to do with the denial of investigating Moussaoui. And yet, you know what? I saw this several times, even in the Washington Post, as given as a reason. Well, we would never want to have a Moussaoui case again where agents were not allowed to listen in and investigate. Well, that was not the reason this was done. It had nothing to do with the FISA law.
Did you tell that to the Washington Post when that story came out?
I did write a letter to the editor in, and I'm trying to think if it was published or not. I think I've in my whole post 9/11, I think I've had one letter to the editor published in the Washington Post, and I might have gotten what is it, 100 words? I might have gotten 100 words in the Washington Post refuting that. But it hasn't been refuted. My letter did not work effectively in the country to refute it. And you still think most people still have this idea that the reason Bush needed to grab this power, this unitary executive, was to then to address the pre-9/11 problems. And that could not be further from the truth.
Okay, well, then let me put this to you another way before we talk about what you tried to do in the lead-up to the war and the smoke signals you were trying to send on that. This basic question that we hear all the time. Are we, in fact, safer now since the whatever reforms were put in place following 9/11, in your opinion?
Well, no. And the reason is it goes back to this squaring the error in creating more enemy. If you're playing a game and only one ball has to go through to hit a goal, and that's the way it is with a terrorist attack. I mean, if your goal is never to allow another terrorist attack, and that's kind of unrealistic. They shouldn't be even talking about preventing all terrorist acts. It gives people false illusions about the reality of what's possible. But if that's the thing, and you have to prevent that goal from being scored, you certainly cannot afford to double and triple and quadruple and keep the other team.
The number of, right.
Of people that are kicking the ball in. And,
right.
And so if you look at it that way, we've created more enemy. I don't like to use these terms enemy, but we've radicalized so many more people in the world against Americans. And so there's no way you can win that way. There's absolutely no way that you can. I mean, that's where it's all, most of what we've done, Guantanamo and the war on terror and launching an unjustified war in Iraq, has all backfired and proven counterproductive.
We're speaking with former FBI Special Agent Colleen Rowley, who tried to raise the red flags about 9/11 before 9/11 when nobody was paying attention. Sounds like they're still not paying attention now. We're going to take your calls, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Also monitoring the chat room over at bradblog.com. If you go on over to bradblog.com, the very top item, hit comments, jump on in, join the conversation. I'll keep my eye on you there. And you truth seekers over at DU, yes, I'm always watching you people. And so I'm going to get to a call real quick here, but you brought up the idea of torture, and we've heard a lot lately about torture that was used when these interrogation techniques that were being used by the FBI that were working. These guys, CIA guys, came in and took it away from the FBI, and that's when apparently they were doing these waterboarding, these so-called enhanced interrogation techniques. Were the FBI investigations that you saw as an FBI agent, you were there until 2004, were they in fact effective, or did we need these more draconian techniques that were then used?
When the experienced and good experienced agents were allowed to do their job, as they would have, you know, certainly our agents in Minneapolis who wanted to do the job in August of 2001, mm-hmm. Ali Soufan, who was this great Lebanese-American Arabic-speaking mm-hmm. agent who had worked on the Cole bombing, very experienced on terrorism, worked under John O'Neill, if he had been allowed to do the debriefing interview of Zubaydah, it was working so far. I think that those things, that's what, and again, these have nothing to do with the Bush innovations. These were just agents who were trained already and doing a good job. And in many cases, they were interfered with and not allowed to work as they normally would. Certainly Ali Soufan, he was pulled off of the Zubaydah.
Yeah, and Ali Soufan had testified just a couple of weeks ago in Congress that they were getting information from Abu Zubaydah.
Yep. He had gotten a lot of confirmation about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's role, etc., from Zubaydah. And, of course, part of the problem was they didn't even understand who Zubaydah was. This is where the ticking time bomb hypothetical always breaks down, when you have the wrong person. Or if you have a totally innocent person, of course, and you're trying to torture things out of the wrong person, it doesn't work at all.
And you're imagining a ticking time bomb, and then you have to, how did you put it? You have to bring in the, quote, Bush innovations.
Yeah,
nice,
well, that's
nice way to put it.
Did I give a good Bush innovation?
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to be nice tonight or something, but, you know, the FBI, if you go back to my analogy about the soccer game, is the goalie here, and they're trying to prevent these acts at the very last minute when they domestically.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to some extent, they even then, the Bush thing about collecting more information
mm-hmm.
has hurt the cause, because they became this massive intelligence collector. Over half of the FBI was diverted from economic crimes, frauds, corruption matters, to working in the so-called war on terror. And they became fancy intelligence analysts, and that's even a glorified term, because it's just tips coming in, serving records, serving letters for credit records, banking records, and they're all inputted into massive computers. And so this is what's counterproductive about it. It's like if you're trying to find a needle in a haystack terrorist, and now you've cluttered up your database or added hay to the haystack, it makes it even more difficult. Our agents were very in tune with the information that came from the flight school in August. And why were they so quick on that? In 5 or 6 days, that information had gone all the way up to George Tenet. He was briefed on August 23rd in Fundamentalist Learns to Fly PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
Why did that hit so quickly? because it didn't land in this massive database of a million names on a terrorist watch list.
And that's what we're doing now. Hang on, Colleen. I got to get to a break here, and then we are going to come back and take your calls. Colleen Raleigh is my guest, former FBI special agent, 9/11 whistleblower, Time Magazine's 2002 Person of the Year, and of course, her greatest honor, she is now a guest blogger at bradblog.com. Thank you, Colleen. Your calls coming on right after this. Brad here on The Molloy Show.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
BradBlog.com, in for Molloy. You can stop by BradBlog and join the conversation over there. Speaking with Colleen Raleigh, FBI special agent, now retired, FBI 9/11 whistleblower, and of course, Time Person of the Year in 2002. Colleen blogged today at BradBlog about her experience trying to get the word out about her concerns about the Iraq War. Those were also ignored, like her warnings about 9/11. And in fact, she went to 60 Minutes. They interviewed her and never ended up running any of that footage at all. Is that correct, Colleen?
That's right. I wonder if they still have the tapes, because at some future point, historians might be interested in seeing. I'm sure there were other media that had Richard Clark types on mm-hmm. that never aired either. It's a pretty amazing thing to see how the PR system and the propaganda system, pre-agenda of the Bush administration was working at that time, just to really push forward, and the media just went along with it.
And the media was going along with it, and we're going along with it. We're going to talk with Mark Harlan of BuzzFlash about that after in the next hour. But read that whole story at BradBlog, because it's really interesting. But maybe when I'm done with this Molloy gig this week, I'll try to contact 60 Minutes and see if we can shake out some of that footage. I think it would be very interesting to look back on now.
I want to thank you for the opportunity just to get a chance to write this down. You know, a lot of people always say, have you written a book yet? They always ask these questions, and it's really indulgent in a way, because the situation is still mm-hmm. going on. We haven't gotten to a happy ending where you feel like you could sit down and, I'll write my memoirs now about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good to put it down, because I've really blocked it out of my head to a great extent. It was so painful at that time with that war fever going on, and then nobody at all listening, and 60 Minutes, you know. I don't think they aired anything about the Iraq War until Richard Clark after that.
I think you got a great start at a first chapter in that article today on BradBlog. Really do. Let me go to John in Los Angeles. John, welcome to the Molloy Show. Do you have a question for Colleen Raleigh?
I do. I just want to say thank you, Ms. Raleigh, for your courage and service to America. I wanted to ask you if during the period prior to 9/11, has it ever occurred to you that perhaps it wasn't incompetence, that perhaps as I feel and as many feel after we read the Project for a New American Century, that there is perhaps a desire to have a Pearl Harbor type of event so that broad actions could be enacted in this country, a unitary presidency, and certain actions could take place. Is it possible, has it ever occurred to you that there was deliberate squashing of your attempts to get search warrants?
Thanks, John, for that call. Colleen?
Well, there's no doubt that this pre-agenda was in existence, the Project for the New American Century, and perhaps officials hoping for a Pearl Harbor. I mean, that's a very sick thing to say, that they were hoping for some kind of an attack that they could then use as a pretext. And there's no doubt at all about that. That's been very much verified. I don't personally know of anything done deliberately before 9/11, but I do know that that the murkiest areas is that there might have been some other tidbits of intelligence, perhaps from foreign intelligence agencies like Mossad or Pakistani sources. And the 9/11 Commission has not done a full job. They even admit that they were not able. They were stonewalled by the Bush administration at every level. So I think that's still a murky area about what other pre-9/11 intelligence was known. And the other area is the NORAD call-out, and that's completely murky.
Yeah, what happened there? Why they didn't scramble the planes?
The timeline doesn't mesh with what people said. Well, they just don't mesh.
All right, Gus in Huntington Beach thinks the FBI didn't make a mistake. He thinks it was intentional. Gus, is that right?
Well, the thing that strikes me is patterns pop up through history, and Americans are really so astute about history. They kind of like study history in school, and then they have it reinforced through movies and stuff. But getting back to patterns, there was an Egyptian army officer who was being used by the FBI during the first investigation of the first World Trade Center bombing. He was an informant working in the group that was building the bomb, and there's a tape conversation of him talking with his FBI handler about, we're getting close, and the FBI was supposed to supply him with phony materials for the bomb, but as it turns out, they were real. And he's talking to his FBI handler, and his FBI handler is
real quick, Gus, because I got to get you a break.
Money. Oh, okay. Well, hey, conspiracy theorists forever.
Okay, thanks, Gus. The question that I get all the time, and I'm sure you get as well. The suggestion that it was an inside job. Would you like to address that before we have to let you go tonight, Colleen?
When you're looking at a situation on the surface, it's amazing what things can look like, and then when you actually find out the full truth of it, what it actually amounted to. That's one thing. And the second thing is that there's been so much deception. about him. Most of the things I know are about embarrassing mistakes. And so when that happens and people don't tell the full truth about things, it does give rise to people who naturally would suspect there's a more nefarious reason for not telling the truth. We're in a terrible situation where people don't even know right from wrong in telling the truth now, and it does give rise to citizen suspicions.
You're right. I think these guys have only themselves to blame when they worry about, when they hear this inside job stuff. Well, sure, they hid enough stuff. They covered up enough stuff. It's hard to not think, well, what did they know, and did they let this happen on purpose somehow? Colleen Rowley, bless you for all you do. Really delighted you were able to be with us tonight, and for your good work over at Brad Blog and across the nation. Thanks for all you do, Colleen.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. All right, coming back with more Malloy Show, Mark Carlin for Buzz Flash, straight ahead. Back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, drafted into duty here, being the media, as always, making as much noise as we possibly can. And speaking of making noise, we will be bringing in Mark Carlin, will be joining me momentarily here. He's the editor and publisher of BuzzFlash.com. They have been making noise. The alternative media has been making noise. Folks like BuzzFlash. For years now, we've been getting it right. Why hasn't the mainstream media been getting it right? And will they ever change before they die or before we die? That's the question. We're going to talk about that with Mark Carlin here very shortly. Speaking of, I want to get to this clip with Rush Limbaugh. And by the way, we are monitoring the Michael Jackson situation. Dead tonight at age 50. and out here in Los Angeles, just a few miles down the road here from us. We're broadcasting out of KTOK AM 1150 in beautiful downtown Burbank, and the crowds at the UCLA Medical Center were so big, so difficult to get through, they actually had to fly Michael Jackson's body out in a helicopter for the coroner's examination, as I understand it. We are monitoring that. If there's any actual news there beyond what's already happened, of course we will let you know. So anyway, I was saying, guys like me at Brad Blog, guys like Mark Carlin over at BuzzFlash, we've been making noise. We've been getting it right for years. But getting that word out is another story, and getting the media to pay attention to it, the mainstream media, the corporate media to pay attention to it, is a different matter. But there's one guy who's able to get the corporate media's attention anytime he wants, anything he says, and of course that's Rush Limbaugh, who's on hundreds and hundreds of affiliate stations across the country, and whatever he says, people listen to this crap, and they believe it. And Rush Limbaugh, incredibly enough, had actually figured out how to blame Mark Sanford, governor of South Carolina, the Republican, quote-unquote, conservative, who was found to have been having an affair with his mistress. He was found a way to blame that somehow on Barack Obama.
Obama wants you to eat. The best way to put it, and it's working. He's trying to kill spirit. All this hope and change, he's trying to kill it. You know how many frustrated Americans there are out there at what's happening?
Like you, Rush?
This Sanford business. I'm going to tell you one of the first thoughts that crossed my mind.
That I'm an irresponsible fat ass?
Mark Sanford. This was the first thought. What he did.
Yeah, what?
Defies logic. This is more than being 180 degrees out of phase because of lust or love.
Yes, there must be another explanation.
To split
right?
the scene for 5 days.
What, yes, what could it be, Rush? What could
and
it
we
be?
We know he's been separated. And he knows, by the way, that the newspaper in his state has the emails between him and his concubine down there in Argentina. He knows this.
Uh-huh.
He knows that somebody knows what's going on.
Right.
He knows his wife knows.
So what's the conspiracy, Rush?
So he ups and leaves for 5 days, doesn't leave anybody in charge of the state.
Right.
In case there's an emergency.
Uh-huh.
This is...
What is it?
This is almost like, I don't give a damn. Country's going to hell in a handbasket. I just want out of here.
That's it.
He had just tried to fight the stimulus money coming to South Carolina. He didn't want any part of it. He lost the battle. He said, what the hell?
Right.
I mean, the federal government's taking over. What the hell? I want to enjoy life.
So he left his wife, cheated on his
wife? One of the first things I thought. Now today he's saying he doesn't want to give up office. He'll stay in office, but...
What is it, Rush? Who should we blame? Who should we blame?
I mean, even Charles Krauthammer says, this is like self-inflicted political suicide.
Right. Personal responsibility.
It certainly appeared to be.
Uh-huh.
The point is, there are a lot of people whose spirit is just, they're fed up, saying, the hell with it. I don't even want to fight this anymore. It's just because I just want to get away from it.
Like you, Rush? Are you quitting?
I'm checking the email.
Are you
Rush?
Quitting?
Are you kidding? This theory of yours about Sanford?
Uh-huh. What's the theory?
No, I'm not kidding. My first thought was, he said, to hell with this.
Yeah.
The Democrats are destroying the country. We can't do anything to stop it. I gave everything I had to stop it here in South Carolina. My
right.
wife's left me. To hell with it. I'm going to enjoy life. What little time I got left.
That's it.
Folks, there are a lot of people that are looking at life. They're saying, screw it. They're saying screw it, and they're going to, before Obama takes away their money,
right?
Before Obama takes away their house,
that's it.
Or the economy takes
yes.
away their house, there are people who are simply saying, "Hell with this!" They've tuned out.
To hell with this! I'm leaving my wife.
I'm going to try to enjoy this as much as I can.
Yeah,
they're thinking about. Well, of course, have you know how many people? Clinton was in Argentina the other night, from what I'm told.
What the hell does that have
I
to do with it, you
think
idiot?
This is what's wrong with the economy today? I frankly think a whole lot of people just lost their spirit.
They lost their spirit. It's the Democrats' fault. It's Obama's fault. That's why Mark Sanford cheated on his wife. He said the hell with it. Of course, it's Obama. It's the Democrats. Is that why your wife left you, Rush Limbaugh? I think she left you before the Democrats came to power, right? What was her reason? And oh, by the way, why do you have a microphone 3 hours a day on every damn station in this country? Everywhere I drive across this country, three stations deep, I can flip around the radio, and there you are lying. And now, apparently, feeling sorry for yourself. You get the microphone. Why doesn't Mark Harlan at BuzzFlash? He tells the truth. He joins me now. Mark, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do I have you there, Mark?
Yes, you do.
How are you, sir?
Hi, Brad.
Good to have you. Mark Harlan, editor and publisher of BuzzFlash. I don't know if you heard any of that Rush Limbaugh clip. He's now blaming the Democrats for Mark Sanford having cheated on his wife. And you'll recall, I expect, Mark, when the media would not refer to folks like BuzzFlash, would not refer to folks like Brad Blog, Talking Points Memos, Fire Dog Lake, all these people who are out there, Ross Story, all these folks who are out there getting the story right, and yet they'll easily, any time, refer to Rush Limbaugh. They did it then, they do it now, as a source, as a respectable, credible guy. How do you explain that, Mark? Why is it that the liars seem to be still winning today?
To a great extent on the radio and on television, it's because the corporations are backing people like Rush Limbaugh, like Sean Hannity, and their interest is in the status quo. Their interest is what the Gay Street lobbyists try to get to help corporations make more money, to help the rich get richer. I remember interviewing Naomi Klein for BuzzFlash. Mm-hmm. And one of the points she made is if you listen to a lot of Rush Limbaugh's the commercials, the national commercials for his syndication that pays him $40 million a year, they're really not trying to increase customer utilization. They're supporting Rush Limbaugh because Limbaugh is able to keep a certain type of working person that feels victimized in the Republican camp or has been, and that will help them increase their profits because under Republican administrations, the wealthy have gotten wealthier, corporations have gotten better tax breaks, and so forth. What he is actually doing in the cut you played is what he always does and what Republicans in general do. The basis of Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, name any one of them. And if you really distill what they're saying, Brad, down to its essence, just as Rush just did in terms of Mark Sanford, they play the victim. They're being victimized. As you said, he's blaming Mark Sanford's adultery and leaving his children alone on Father's Day.
Yeah.
On Democrats.
On Democrats.
And if you listen to Russ's show, or you listen to Hannity or O'Reilly, or any of those, you know, people, Mike Savage, they're the victims. They're always the victims.
Well, they are now, but they weren't the victims, were they, before the 2008 election when they thought they were in power, certainly before the 2006 election, when they thought, you, Mark, you were the victim. You were the sore loser. You needed to be marginalized. Were they still playing the victims back then?
Yes, they were. If you look at Ann Coulter, even prior to 2008, I mean, Ann Coulter is basically a sensationalist book-selling machine. She thinks of the most outrageous thing to say. But if you can recall, the liberals were the enemy. The liberals were trying to bring down America. The liberals were attacking our lifestyle. The liberals were laughing that we wave the flag. So again, they were the victims. O'Reilly is constantly playing the victim. He's the victim of Hollywood. He's the victim of liberals don't honor their country. The military, our soldiers are victims of liberals who were the kind that, which isn't even true, it's been disproven, that spat on them when they returned from Vietnam. So I would disagree with you, Brad. I think they played the victim then. What they played the victim then of was culture wars, not the politics.
Well, you're right, and you know, because I still hear it to this day, and it cracks me up, Sean Hannity talking about, oh, you're not going to hear this in the mainstream media. The mainstream media, you idiot. You are the mainstream media. And, you know, acting like he's the alternative Fox News, you know, the number one news channel. They're the they're outside of the mainstream. They're the alternative media. It is laughable. Mark Carlin, we're going to stick with you, and we're going to take your calls, 877-520-1150. Calls from Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash.com or about the alternative media. Who's really the alternative media? And can the media survive in the age of Obama? Who's going to survive here? The mainstream media? The alternative media? Any of us? All of that and much more straight ahead. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. More after this.
Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack, Twang, and Eddie Hisman, Ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire, poker, motion, poker, passion, deep, purple, satisfaction, baby, baby, gotta, gimme, getting hot, Sammy's cooking, Leslie, Cora, Richie, Valens, end of story, my Vista, Fuji, I'm a Kamasutra, Rama, Lama, Richard, Perry, Spectre, Barry, Righteous, Archer, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco, Pop, it, Fats, back, and Tinker, Pop, it,
life is a rock, but the radio
rolls me. Oh, yeah, rolling you all week here on the radio on the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike, who's on vacation. He will be back Monday. Never fear, truth seekers. Keep it lit until then. Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash.com joins us. Oh, the independent internet media is taking over the radio. thanks for sticking with us, Mark. We'll take in your calls at 877-520-1150. Now, Mark, when did you start BuzzFlash.com? I lost him again. I'll get him. There we go. There you go, Mark. When did you start BuzzFlash.com? Mark?
Yes.
There we go. All right. When did BuzzFlash.com begin? When did you start?
We began in May of 2000, and so we were around before the theft of the election in 2000, the mugging of democracy by the Supreme Court, which a lot of people now have forgotten, and after 9/11, a lot of people forgot.
Yeah, I didn't forget it. You didn't forget it. You've been great, by the way, on election integrity issues and paying attention to the stuff that actually matters. You have a very similar, BuzzFlash.com is really, frankly, not unlike the format of DrudgeReport.com. Very simple, just the headlines, just the facts, ma'am. So I'm sure your hits, your traffic, your references from the mainstream media are at least as high as Drudge's, right?
I'm trying not to be insulted, Brad.
Yeah? Why is that?
But we do hope that we have a bit more credibility than Mr. Drudge, who began his career by pulling tips out of the garbage when he was working in the NBC gift shop out in L.A. And we have been, since May of 2000, extremely passionate and aggressive progressives, and certainly have relied more on material from great publications like the Brad Blog, and I think that makes us very distinctive. The Drudge Report is really something that, if it were started now on the internet, would maybe have a couple hundred people looking at it. It's famous for being famous, basically, among media people, and its heyday was when Drudge was the official go-to spot to leak from the group that was trying to impeach
the cabal,
President
trying
Clinton.
To bring down Clinton, right?
And Starr and his gang, they leaked to Drudge. Particularly, his most infamous leak was the semen on the blue dress of Monica Lewinsky.
And he has enough. And he has enough traffic coming in, directed from mainstream outlets, even though he's not credible. Whereas you got to go out there and beg for money because you're not ad supported. You're reader supported. And if folks want to keep the alternative media alive, please stop by buzzflash.com. Help them out. Buy one of their books, one of their videos, DVDs. They got all kinds of promos out there. Keep the alternative media alive. Let me get to Scott in Baltimore, Maryland, with a very quick question for Mark Carlin. What's up, Scott?
Very quick. The mugging of 2000. What do you call what the mainstream press did for Obama in 2008? Good God, ABC News gave $160,000 to Obama, $5,000 for McCain. What do you call that? And Hannity.
Where's your facts on that, Scott? Where's that coming from, those numbers?
I just heard it a couple days ago.
Where'd you hear it?
On talk radio. Do you disagree? Do you deny him?
No, I'm asking where you got your information from so we know that it's accurate. Where is it from, Scott?
I'm not sure.
Okay,
I don't know exactly where.
So you're throwing out crap that you picked up from talk radio, from Rush Limbaugh or something.
Did the mainstream press not help Obama? Do they not have a slobbering love affair with him?
Hardly. Thank you for that call, Mr. Goldberg. Let me get Mark's thoughts on it. I got about 30 seconds for you.
It doesn't. The mainstream media is basically for the status quo. What happened in 2000 had nothing to do with the First Amendment. It had to do with the Supreme Court stealing the election on behalf of one of the candidates.
It sure did. I got to get out, Mark. Mark Carlin, BuzzFlash.com. Andrew Craig after this.
Stand my ground. Won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world.
Talking about Governor Don Siegelman, who I believe was a guest on this very program about two or three weeks ago with Mike Malloy when he was here and not on vacation, as he is now. So it is I, Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike all week long. And, we're talking about the media. We're talking about accountability. We're taking your calls when I can fit them in. Next hour, Desi Doyne is going to join us for the Green News Report. And we're going to have a report from West Virginia on the protests that have been going on out there. Over mountaintop removal. Yeah, they're just blowing up mountains out there. Really, literally. Blowing off the tops of mountains to get to the coal, as Desi likes to say, to get to the juicy bits of coal. Oh, brother. And Daryl Hannah was arrested for protesting out there. Does that count, media? Will you pay attention now? A little bit. All right, my next guest is Andrew Krieg. He's a Washington, D.C.-based commentator, journalist, and attorney, a contributor to Huffington Post, where he's been writing on his, it says 5 months investigation of the Don Siegelman case, but Andrew, it's been going on longer at this point than 5 months, hasn't it?
It has been. It's been about 8 months or so.
And you're doing a hell of a job digging into details. I mean, this Don Siegelman story, governor of Alabama, who was essentially railroaded by the Bush administration, by Karl Rove. Can you give us the Don Siegelman story? This won't be easy, I realize, but can you give us the Don Siegelman story in a nutshell here?
Well, it's hard, but I've had a lot of practice doing it because it's both the most complicated but also the most important story, Brad, that mm-hmm. I've worked on in 40 years since I started journalism. Mm. And it was really hard to sum it up, but it happens that a great friend of mine used to be an editor at the Washington Post, and he spent 48 years there as an editor. Bob Alden holds the record. And he said, look, if you're going to spend this much time on the thing, don't try to combine 10 years into a feature graph. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, on the other hand, just get to it. And here's the point, and you've already said it. He was railroaded. So a lot of us journalists we want to be fair to everybody, get it all sides in a paragraph, mm-hmm. but you cut right to it, and that's the only way you can look at it.
And it's very, yeah, because there are so many aspects to this thing, and one of the my pet peeves, I interviewed Governor Siegelman last summer, summer of 2008 at the Democratic Convention, and got to talk about one of the aspects nobody talks about, which was his 2002 election that he says was stolen on electronic voting machines. They don't, nobody talks about that. It's hard enough getting attention to the main charges against him, which now may amount to 20 years as he's out on appeal and fighting his conviction for something that has never historically been a crime. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, let's talk about the here and now, but I'd love to talk about that 2002 election also. But he and all of us, including at a big conference at the National Press Club tomorrow,
yep,
that I've spent some time organizing and I'm speaking at, that's the focus, the 20 years that he's facing. You raise the point that virtually nobody has ever been accused, much less convicted and sentenced or threatened with 20 years for his main crime, so-called crime. Here's what it was, is that he asked one of the richest two or three people in the state of Alabama to contribute to a nonprofit association to benefit public schools. And the person did that, and later Siegelman reappointed the person to a board that he'd already been on,
right,
with three previous governors, and quit because he didn't want to be on the board anymore. And Siegelman persuaded him to rejoin, and then he quit a year later. Now, when people are looking to set people up, they go after the person, and then they try to think anything that they've ever done that can be made to look like a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have here. And it's so amazing that 75 former attorney generals, the top law enforcement officials in well over 40 of the states, have written letters questioning why this should be a crime.
And by bipartisan attorneys,
yes,
general, as I understand. Unfortunately, while Don Siegelman's case is, as far as I'm concerned, an absolute outrage, and I'm speaking with Andrew Krieg, journalist, who has recently brought out some terrific nuggets about the conflicts of interest that the judge in his case, in the Siegelman case, has. But while Siegelman's case is an outrage, he's actually gotten some coverage in the media, not a lot, but some, whereas he was not the only one who seems to have been railroaded. Elected Democrats, you say in your statement about the forum about the Justice Department's misconduct and political prosecutions that will be held in D.C. tomorrow morning, you say that elected Democrats were seven times more likely to be investigated than GOP officials during the Bush administration. So there are names, scores and scores of folks who are sitting in jail, who are under investigation, who are facing charges. Is it possible that, Andrew Krieg, that Democrats are just seven times dirtier than Republicans, and that it's completely legitimate that they're being investigated at that rate under the Bush administration?
I doubt it, but I did have this discussion with my older brother, who's extremely conservative, and he thinks he was just here, and he's actually coming to the forum tomorrow. He's from Alaska, but the extreme conservatives, like my brother, think that they're more likely, but there's just no way anybody could say seven times.
Yeah, that seems that strains credulity for certain. And why is it then that the Obama administration, Attorney General Eric Holder, does not seem to be investigating this and looking back at these prosecutions? My own organization, VelvetRevolution.us, we launched a campaign ourselves a few weeks ago, RestoreJustice@justice.com, asking Holder to go back and investigate all of these prosecutions and tell us, you know, were these political or were these legitimate, and set the, you know, set the issue aside, vacate the charges if they were political. He hasn't even begun that investigation. Why?
Well, now you're talking about the inner sanctum, and it's very hard for anyone to penetrate there. I'll take a shot at it, but people don't want anybody to know the real stuff. And so, for example, we tried to get people from the Justice Department to come to this conference tomorrow, and everyone's got an excuse why not. And I covered the Justice Department for 5 years, and it was different back in the day, a couple of decades ago, when you could have this kind of back and forth, mm-hmm. and maybe it was off the record, but you could get some insight about what was going on. Here, part of the whole thing is secrecy. We know better than anybody. We're not talking about it till the indictment goes down. But having said that, it's too important just to leave it that. And so Velvet Revolution's doing some tremendous work. I encourage people who care about this to just put their name on the Velvet Revolution site or somehow show some support that people care about this, because this truly is a fundamental citizenship obligation to get into this stuff.
Well, it seems as if people don't understand that, you know, I think a lot of people feel hopeless out there, understandably, but I think if we make noise, if we can all make enough noise, maybe, just maybe, it'll make a difference. Andrew Krieg was referring to RestoreJustice@justice.com, but there's a lot of folks out there who are trying to bring attention to this. The good news is that the forum tomorrow that you'll be holding out there in D.C., the House Judiciary Chairman John Conyers is going to be keynoting that. It's going to be 8 to 11 a.m. at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and the good news is C-SPAN, I hear, is going to be carrying it. Am I correct?
That's absolutely correct, and I'm just thrilled at that, because the Huffington Post has been carrying my stories at full length. One was 4,600 words, and it's just between Huffington Post and C-SPAN, mm-hmm. it's getting around a kind of media blockade from a traditional media where I worked for many years, to get at what's going on here. And I'll try to talk quicker than a Midwesterner normally does, Brad, because this is so important, and there's a lot to mention. But one is, while the traditional media says, gee, we do all this investigative stories, what would ever happen if we have to cut back, the fact of the matter is they have not gotten into this stuff. It's complicated, it's controversial, mm-hmm. and it's just much easier to have us all thinking about, you know, Miss California all the time than to get into this very basic stuff that's about what happens if people are falsely accused.
And that was the case, you know, it was the alternative media. Certainly your work at Huffington Post, Larissa Alexandrovna at rawstory.com, you know, trying to dig into the Siegelman story, the Paul Miner story, the Charles Walker story, and I think his son will be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is from your press release. Former Georgia State Senator, Senate Majority Leader Charles Walker's 10-year sentence will be one of the topics discussed tomorrow. Last month, his 2005 trial judge recused himself after Walker proved an appearance of bias. 4 years later, and the judge finally recuses himself? This guy's facing a 10-year sentence?
Well, it's totally outrageous. There's never been a conviction like it, and he was convicted on 40 counts of exaggerating the size of his weekly newspaper subscriptions that go to a African-American community in Augusta, Georgia. And this is what I mean. It's never been prosecuted anywhere in the United States, and the guy's serving 10 years for this.
These guys turned the Department of Justice into a political bludgeon like we have never seen before in this country. And I think we don't even, Andrew Krieg, know the full extent of how many political prosecutions
there
are. No,
we don't. And there's a great movie that I've recently seen by John McTiernan, Hollywood director, as you know, filmmaker, did The Hunt for Red October, Die Hard, and he's collected a lot of these stories. We're going to be passing out that video tomorrow at the National Press Club. He'll be not a speaker. He likes to be, you know, be behind the camera, but he'll be there.
All right, hold your thought there, Andrew. I got to get to a break. Going to come back, take a quick call here, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. If you have a question about the Siegelman case, the political prosecutions, that lousy bum Karl Rove, who seems to so far be getting away with every damn thing. Let's stop that, shall we? Brad, on the Molloy Show, more after this.
I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dull surprise. I'll be with you, darling, soon.
That's what I'm worried about. Don Siegelman taking a slow ride to jail for the next 20 years, unless people speak up and start making some damn noise. Tomorrow in D.C., there will be a forum about the Justice Department's misconduct in their prosecutions, their political prosecutions over the last 8 years of Democrats at the rate of 7-1 over Republicans. I'm speaking with Andrew Krieg, journalist, D.C. attorney, organizer of that forum tomorrow where John Conyers will be speaking. It'll be on C-SPAN, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Time to start haranguing CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News to carry it and report on what is there. Andrew Krieg, can we take a quick call here?
Please.
All right. Doug from Arkansas.
Whoa, yeah, hello.
You got a bad phone. What's your question?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago, I was driving late, and I heard Mr. Siegelman's interview, and these are honest questions, but I don't know how to ask them any other way than this. If he got a chance to explain his story to a jury, I understand they acquitted him of 30-something charges and found him guilty on several others. I'm at a loss to understand if 12 of his friends and neighbors in his community found him guilty, why we should be very much more concerned.
Okay.
And that's an honest question.
No, and I appreciate that question, Doug. Thank you.
Well, first of all, Arkansas, I've still got the old family farm in Clinton, Arkansas. My brothers didn't want to let it go, and so I've got a lot of fond regards there. Here is the incredible audacity that is mind-boggling that I looked into. I didn't really expect to find it, but I've documented it in my stories on the Huffington Post, printed over the last month, is if you have a corrupt judge who's working with the prosecutors, they can make anything happen. And I'm a very experienced journalist and attorney, and I don't use the word corrupt lightly. It can be dangerous. But I've documented that this judge had an animosity going way back toward Siegelman, and had huge financial interests in this case. The judge was a 30% shareholder of a company that was getting $300 million in Bush administration contracts during the trial. But to go to your question, the difference between Siegelman and Ted Stevens from Alaska is Stevens had a judge that was looking out for the defendant to have a fair trial. Siegelman had a judge that was working with the prosecutors, in effect, to make sure that Siegelman would be eliminated from Alabama politics and put away for a long time.
And, Andrew, am I right? In the Ted Stevens case, for example, there was prosecutorial misconduct. It doesn't mean that Ted Stevens did nothing wrong. So even in the worst-case scenario for Don Siegelman, would it? You're an attorney here. If it's shown that there was prosecutorial misconduct, shouldn't that be enough to vacate those charges as is?
Well, it's much simpler for Siegelman, and I still don't know why he hasn't done it, but he should get the judge knocked out of his case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Walker in Georgia did that, as you mentioned earlier in the show, and filed something in May 13th, and 5 days later, his judge left the case, and that's how important a judge can be in these things. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you make a very good point. I got to get out. I want to give folks information. PoliticalProsecutions.org. You can get information on the forum tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 11, tomorrow, Friday, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. At the National Press Club. It will be on C-SPAN. Andrew Krieg will be speaking. A whole host of other folks and organizations who brought this together, Alliance for Justice, Project Save Justice, VelvetRevolution.us, full disclosure, that's mine. Thank you, Andrew, and keep up the fight. Keep making noise out there, sir.
Thank you so much, and by the way, it's Channel 3 on C-SPAN.
C-SPAN 3. All right, you might have to look at it on the web. Find it, spread the news, make noise. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks.
All right, we're coming back with the Green News Report. A lot more hell-raising, your calls, whatever the hell else we want to do. Brad, in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Final hour. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy are enjoying a lovely vacation somewhere down in the Sunshine State, and they're not listening to me. At least I hope. They deserve a break. They'll be back Monday. I'm back with you tomorrow night for one more night. I have been delighted to sit in for Mike all week long out here from Los Angeles, live from the beautiful AM 1150 K-Talk Studios here in beautiful downtown Burbank, not far from the Michael Jackson craziness a few miles down the road. Michael Jackson died, of course, at the age of 50 today. We have been monitoring that all night, and if there is any news to report above and beyond what we already know, we will tell you about it. As I said at the top of the show, tough day for folks like me who grew up in the 70s, losing Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett at the age of 62 on the same day. And, oh, yeah, Ed McMahon. We lost him earlier this week. So that's three. That's enough. Thank you. Joining me this hour, my lovely co-host, Desi Doyen, co-host of the Green News Report, is going to be joining me here momentarily. If you don't know the Green News Report, it's because your radio station don't play it. If you like the Green News Report, please ask them to do so. They can air it for free. We would love to be on the station doing what I try to do every day at bradblog.com, which is bring attention to news that matters that the media is too often ignoring. And the Green News Report, we do that a couple times a week, 6 minutes a day, and it's a fun report, don't you think, Des?
I think so.
Well, of course you do.
I enjoy it.
You're the managing editor.
Yes.
You better think so. And, well, let's give folks, let's give listeners a chance to decide if they like it as well. We're going to play today's Green News Report. Sit back and give it a listen. Then we're going to be joined by Bob Kincaid to talk about one of the stories in the report today about mountaintop removal going on in West Virginia and the protests that are going on out there. We're also going to be joined by Lorella Scarborough, I believe, one of the protesters who I think she was arrested. We'll find out. She was arrested. You don't have to nod. Your mic
is on. You're right. Yeah. She was arrested.
There you go.
She was.
Remember how that works? Okay. They're gonna join us. We're also gonna take your calls on green issues and, you know what, any other damn thing you want to talk about. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Fire off that green news report, Tony.
It's Thursday, June 25, 2009.
Daryl Hannah arrested. No, she wasn't drunk. Floor fight pending over climate change. Plus, the Supreme Court kills a lake.
Yay, that's what we pay them for. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise, put up a fucking line.
Right, Desi, it's another big green day. What do you have for us?
Well, the sweeping Waxman-Markey Climate and Energy Bill is headed to the floor of the U.S. House Friday. Formerly known as the American Clean Energy and Security Act, the bill is the first attempt to control the nation's emissions to reduce the future impacts of global warming with the implementation of a cap-and-trade system and with funding and incentives for clean energy, efficiency, and infrastructure.
Now, the fight has been going on for weeks over this bill in committee. Among the Democrats at first, and then the Republicans were added in, is there anything left now to this bill now that it's made its way to the floor of the House?
There's plenty left that makes some environmental groups happy, some very unhappy. Representative Connell Peterson, Democrat of Minnesota and chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, was granted extensive concessions to benefit the agriculture industry, including a key provision that gives control over agriculture offsets to the Department of Agriculture rather than the EPA that has traditionally ruled over this.
What are agriculture offsets?
Those are the carbon offsets and carbon allowances that would go to farmers that would give them extra money for sequestering carbon in their crops. Also changes the renewable energy standards so that indirect land use changes in foreign countries when people clear forest in order to grow biofuel crops, that will no longer be included in this bill.
So as part of the cap and trade program they're putting in place, it gives an advantage essentially to farmers, to agriculture.
And to the big agriculture industry.
Big ag.
Yes. A majority of environmental groups do support the bill, citing the importance of establishing a framework for emissions now. The League of Conservation Voters, a conservative group, announced that it will withhold its coveted endorsement from any member who votes against the bill.
Of course they will.
Two-thirds of Americans think the federal government should regulate greenhouse gas emissions, according to a new Washington Post ABC poll out this morning. But that level drops to 52% when it comes to a cap-and-trade carbon allowance system. Even after concessions for both Republicans and conservative Democrats, the vote on Friday may be close, so contact your representative in the House and let them know what you want them to do.
We've got an easy link to your representative. If you go to bradblog.com, scroll down on the right side of the page, all the way at the bottom, there's a link. You put in your zip code, and it'll tell you who your representatives are and make it easy to contact them.
An actress was arrested for something other than public intoxication when Daryl Hannah and Dr. James Hansen, the chief climate scientist for NASA, were arrested this week at a protest against coal giant Massey Energy, the largest company that utilizes the controversial destructive mining technique known as mountaintop removal. Over 30 people were arrested in the peaceful protests for blocking a road, including 94-year-old former West Virginia Congressman Democrat Ken Heckler.
Oh, my God. We're going to have, by the way, Bob Kincaid, who was out there covering those protests. He'll be with us tonight on the Mike Malloy Show, which I will be guest hosting, and you will be joining me, and we'll get more details on that mountaintop removal and those protests from those great patriots. Thank you, guys. Tonight, check out MikeMalloy.com for more.
The protest was at an elementary school in West Virginia, which sits only 300 feet from a coal slurry impoundment owned by a subsidiary of Massey Energy. The impoundment is held back by an earthen dam of the same type that failed in Tennessee back in December, inundating 300 acres in minutes with billion gallons of toxic sludge. Now, if the impoundment at the elementary school should fail, there will not be enough time to evacuate the school children.
Unbelievable. That toxic spill in December wiped out a lot of homes, didn't it,
Yes, it did. 27 homes.
Yeah.
The Department of Energy has begun dispensing money from a $25 billion Advanced Technology Loan Fund for automakers to, quote, create thousands of green jobs while helping reduce the nation's dangerous dependence on foreign oil. About $8 billion in federal loans will go to Ford, Nissan, and Tesla Motors, an electric car maker, with Ford receiving the bulk of the research funding. These are loans, mind you, that must be paid back. Ford is the largest beneficiary with almost $6 billion. Nissan gets about $1.5 billion, and Tesla Motors only gets less than $500
million. And these are the guys making the all-electric car, Tesla.
Yes, it is. They make a sports car.
Well, let's not give them much money then.
The announcement comes in the same week that researchers at the University of Michigan released the results of a study that show there was a concerted effort by company officials at the big three U.S. automakers to discount the results of consumer research when making their planning decisions. The main author of the report said the decline of American auto manufacturing began with the popularity of fuel-efficient cars from Japan, which the American companies knew through their own consumer research. He also said, and you'll appreciate this, that, quote, the reaction to fuel prices was way beyond what anybody could have predicted.
Who could have foreseen it?
A co-author said that, quote, if GM had followed its own research, it would likely not be in Chapter 11 today. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled this week to allow a mining company to dump their toxic waste into a lake, even with the full knowledge that to do so will kill off all life in the lake. In a 6-3 vote, the court said a federal appeals court wrongly blocked an Army Corps of Engineer permit for a gold mining company, Coeur Alaska Inc., to dump their nearly 5 million tons of mine waste, even though the mining company, environmental groups, and the Supreme Court are all aware the waste will literally extinguish all life in the lake. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin called the ruling great news for Alaska. Environmental groups said the decision could undermine the EPA's ability to protect the nation's waterways from toxic mining waste.
Heck of a job, Supreme Court. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yeah. There you go. That has been your Green News Report. Nicely done, Des.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And by the way, I should mention Green 960 up in San Francisco. Our friends up there, John Scott. We started doing the Green News Report the first time when we were sitting in for John Scott up on Green 960. They are, of course, a Green News Report affiliate. And we are delighted to be on their station. I understand live tonight that that Randy Rhodes, she preempted us last night. Yeah. All right, when we come back, we're going to speak with Bob Kincaid, who is out there in West Virginia. He's the host of Head On Radio. Actually, before we go, let me play this real quick. I got 40 seconds on here. This is how the Republicans are fighting against, what is this, energy?
The Waxman-Markey climate and energy legislation.
Right, and here's their new video. This will do it. This will end it.
Democrats are determined to pass cap-and-trade legislation.
Oh, no.
Even if it makes power unaffordable for all of us.
That's a lie.
Nobody in this country realizes that cap-and-trade is a tax.
John Dingell, Democrat.
Whose wife works for GM.
Yeah, and the lights are going out in the commercial now.
Thanks, Mr. President. Thanks, Mr. President.
Thanks, Mr. President.
Thanks, Mr. President.
Don't let Democrats tax your lights out.
Yeah.
Tell them no to cap and trade.
Thanks, Democrats.
Yeah. Thanks, Democrats. Hey, by the way, Republicans, thanks, idiots, for misrepresenting what's going on. Thanks for running us into the ground with your crappy coal companies, your energy companies, your car companies. Stop me, Des. I'm like, don't lean back. Don't what? Supporting, you know, this has gotten us into this mess. These crappy cars, this global warming. Am I blaming the wrong person here, Des?
Well, I think that you could say that many people have lots of responsibility to could be spread across all of America. But yes, in this specific case, in this particular commercial too, they are misrepresenting, you know, what the actual cost will be for Americans. They continue to misrepresent studies that say that it's going to cost a lot of money. But we'll get to that.
We will.
Yes.
We will get to that right after this break when we're also going to be joined by Bob Kincaid talk about mountaintop removal and the protests that are going on out there. We talked about during the story, Daryl Hannah arrested and a whole bunch of other folks. One of those folks who was arrested will be joining us as well, I think, coming up right after this on The Molloy Show.
Gold finger. He's the man.
There's too many.
Mike Malloy program. Brad in for Mike all week long. We're joined now, of course, my lovely co-host, Desi Doyen, is co-host of Green News Report, is joining me for this hour. We're going to take your calls in a little bit, 877-520-1150 on green stuff or anything you want to talk about if we can get it in. Joined by Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio. He attended the House congressional hearings today on Mountaintop. Was that today, Bob?
It was indeed, Brad. Good evening.
Good evening, sir. He's also the president of the board of directors for Coal River Mountain Watch, a grassroots organization dedicated to ending mountaintop removal and rebuilding sustainable communities. And, of course, folks who listen on the MikeMalloy.com stream can hear today's broadcast from earlier of Bob Kincaid Show, right after the Malloy Show tonight. Welcome to the show, Bob. How'd those hearings go in the House today?
It was really, really exciting, Brad. For the first time in a generation, Congress is actually beginning to take a serious look at what's being done to Appalachia. And I can't say clearly enough how important it is that these things are taking place. The hearing today on S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. It was chaired by Senator Ben Cardin, Democrat of Maryland. And the co-sponsor of the bill is also Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. And they were both present for the hearing. And even James Inhofe of Oklahoma.
Oh, brother.
Showed up to, yeah, one of our favorites.
Yeah. Who calls global warming, he believes global warming is a hoax. Inhofe, right. Okay, he showed up. Good.
Showed up to sort of do his master's bidding and read something into the record.
Uh-huh. And so, but the Democrats seem to be taking this seriously? Because I'm concerned Barack Obama has been allowing a lot more of this mountaintop removal. And for folks who don't know, it's essentially blowing off the top of mountains. They've removed, mountaintop removal has flattened more than 500,000 acres in West Virginia and other states as well. Permanently buried some 2,000 miles of streams all to get at the coal. Is that right, Bob? Do I have that generally correct?
Yes, it is. 500 mountains, thousands, in excess of 1,000 miles of headwater streams. And headwater streams are the little capillary streams that feed all of the rivers of the eastern seaboard. 3 million pounds of high explosives are used on West Virginia alone every day. That works out to roughly a Hiroshima every 7 days or so.
And this doesn't return, does it? I mean, even when they clear cut a forest, eventually it will return. We're talking about it becomes, I think you've described it as a moonscape after they've blown it up, correct?
Correct. There's no way to return this to anything approaching a natural state. There are things that grow. The forests of Appalachia are among the oldest and largest contiguous deciduous hardwood forests in the world, and we wipe out massive numbers of species when mountaintop removal is performed, and it doesn't grow back. It can't come back. The ginseng's gone. The wildlife's gone. The rams are gone. The slippery elm is gone. And it's replaced by non-native grasses that literally grow. Well, they turn our mountains into giant chia pets. That's all that will grow there.
I got to get to a break here. Stick around with me, Bob. Is Lorella Scarborough with you?
She is indeed.
All right. I'd like to talk to her. She recently got arrested out at these protests that are getting increasingly heated, as far as I can tell. Stick around. Brad Friedman here with Desi Doyen in the studio, Bob Kincaid in D.C., and Lorelei Scarborough is going to join us in a moment. There we go. That's for West Virginia. Uh-oh. We lost it? Okay. Play us out of here, Tony. The hell with those coal companies anyway. They can buy their own damn commercials. All right, Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stick around. Much more ahead.
We're falling out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind.
that's not the. They're not the sponsor. Here's the sponsor for the for this hour. Here we go. Here you go.
Yeah.
Gonna take you on a ride. That's for sure. These guys have a lot of money to produce songs, don't they? And this is a new song, too, by the way. This isn't an old-timey song. Yeah. They just put this out. It was a month or so ago, wasn't it? They got 7 different versions of it. I mean, when I hear music like this, I want to dig crap in the ground and get lung poisoning from it. I mean, that's what's... They're in. Here you go. It's a big finish. Got that, Bob Kincaid? Cole is West Virginia. Okay, no, that's it. There we go. See, I started to play again. Did you get that, Bob? Cole is West Virginia, so why are you complaining about that, my friend?
Well, you know, we put it on our cornflakes.
I bet you do. Bob Kincaid from the Head On Radio Network, the host of Head On with Bob Kincaid, but also a tremendous activist out there in West Virginia trying to stop this mountaintop removal. I want to speak with, you're there with one of the protesters, but very quickly, Barack Obama has not been doing a lot to stop this practice of blowing the tops off of mountains to get at the coal, has he, Bob?
In short, Brad, he is a disappointment on this. There was some talk done during the campaign, things like, I believe there has to be a better way to mine coal than blowing the tops off our mountains, but he didn't quite get around to saying what that better way was. And the fact of the matter is, there is no such thing as responsible mountaintop removal.
Yeah, and
it's oxymoronic and self-contradictory.
And wouldn't it be nice if he came out and corrected the record that the coal companies are using, where he's during the campaign where he was talking about clean coal technology? Wouldn't it be nice if he came out and said, well, it would be nice to have clean coal technology, but it doesn't exist. And tell them, please stop using that to promote the coal industry.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'd like to have fat-free lard and purple polka-dotted unicorns, too. But they're not real either.
Yeah, well, they're going to use that in your campaign commercial now, Bob. Let me speak, or maybe you can set this up for me. Lorella Scarborough, I know that she was arrested on Tuesday, along with James Hansen and actress Daryl Hannah, at the protest at the Marsh Fork Elementary School in Raleigh County in West Virginia. We talked a little bit about it on the Green News Report, but what were they protesting there, and why did it lead to these arrests, Bob?
Well, it was part of a week of actions, Brad, trying to focus the attention of the nation on the absolute necessity of ending mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
Because insofar as it's not, you know, this is not a local issue, this is not a statewide issue, this is not a regional issue, this is a national issue. Anybody listening to the program tonight, for instance, can go to ilovemountains.org and input their zip code, and it will tell you what your connection to mountaintop removal is. And you'd be surprised the number of people who have a connection to it. It happens at our light switches.
How many states is this done in? Is this only in West Virginia, or is it states around the country, Bob?
No, it's primarily West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, Virginia, and there's some surface mining in Tennessee, but it goes all the way to China, Brad.
Let's put
you believe in some of it now.
Delicious, thank you. Let's talk to Lorella Scarborough here for a minute. She's from the Coal River Mountain Watch, where you can get more information at crmw.net. Lorella is the granddaughter, daughter, and widow of West Virginia coal miners. The home in which she was built by her late husband, who passed away due to black lung. He was an underground coal miner for 35 years. Lorella, thanks for what you're doing out there now to make noise. How are you dealing with folks in your community who may not agree with you, realizing that I think it's 3% of all jobs in West Virginia come from mountaintop removal? Are you getting a lot of heat from the neighbors?
Well, what's happened is things are really heating up in the coal fields. What's happening down here is we're basically in the midst of a civil war. This is turning neighbor against neighbor. And what happened this past week, we had a rally, and a lot of our neighbors and a lot of coal miners who are not even from the area showed up in order to protest the protesters. And they were very violent. They were very angry. They were very belligerent. They spat on us. They called us names. And it's become a very, very dangerous place to be now if you take a stand against mountaintop removal. One of the things that they don't seem to understand is we are not taking a stand against coal. We are taking a stand against mountaintop removal and against coal as an energy source. We believe that we need to start transitioning to renewable energies and transition from coal as an energy source. And we also believe that we can continue to do responsible, traditional, underground, room and pillar coal mining.
And so you would be okay. It's not coal itself. It's blowing off the tops of these mountains. If they were doing it responsibly and mining the old-fashioned way, you would be okay with that, Lorella?
I am okay with, well, let me say first of all that I would prefer that we never, never, ever send another person underground to mine coal, to breathe in coal dust and to die of black lung. I watched my husband die a very long, slow, and agonizing death of black lung, and it's a given when we send the people that we love underground, if they live long enough, that's the end for them, that we know that, and they know that they're going to die from black lung. So let me say that I would prefer that never, never, ever have to happen again. But the economic base for the state of West Virginia, the economy is based on coal, and our politicians refuse to allow any type of job diversity in the coal fields, and therefore what's happened is we have become dependent on coal. Now we need to start transitioning from that, but I can deal with responsible underground room and pillar coal mining. There's about a list of about 200 things that we actually need coal for, from building wind turbines to skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. But we certainly, given the technology that we have today, we certainly don't need coal as an energy source any longer.
Well, I should add 7% of all coal production in the U.S. comes from mountaintop removal. So if you don't want folks going down there to get it, and you'll have to educate me because I don't know how it works. If you don't want people going down there to get it, you don't want to blow off the mountaintops, how do you get at the coal?
Well, I think it is necessary. I think it is necessary if we're going to have coal for it to be gotten by going underground, traditional underground room and pillar coal mining like my husband did for 35 years. I would prefer that we never have to do that, but like I said, that is a necessity,
right,
in the state of West Virginia. We live in mono economy here, and that are the only good paying jobs at this point. And we count on our politicians. They need to start offering some type of job diversity. I am in support of traditional underground room and pillar coal mining. It just would be my heart's desire that we would never have to do that, but it seems that that's a necessary evil at this point.
Until we find alternative energy and ways that we don't have to rely on coal. The Marsh Fork Elementary School protest. Tell me about that. What was that about? What were you guys directly protesting? Was it the mountaintop removal or the coal slurry sludge ponds?
What we are 100% against, and what we're 100% committed in ending is mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
It is not necessary to do mountaintop removal in order to access the coal. Mountaintop removal exists only because there's a greater profit margin for the coal company, and so they destroy the mountains, they destroy our water, they destroy our air, they destroy everything around us, so they can have a greater profit margin. We are also standing against the 2.8 billion gallon toxic sludge dam that sits high above the Marsh Fork Elementary School, and that school has about 200 kids in there. Now you need to understand that these are pre-K through fifth grade kids. We've got four-year-olds in this school, and they're sitting in the direct line of a leaking toxic sludge dam.
Is it leaking?
And it's just it has what's called controlled drainage.
Okay.
And if you can imagine that. And so it's just a matter of time. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 200 kids directly in the path of that. That sits 400 yards up on the hill above an elementary school.
Lorella Scarborough is a community organizer with Coal River Wind Project. You can get more information on that at coalriverwind.org. And I know those protests are heating up out there, and thank you for getting arrested, Lorella. I'm sorry you had to go through that. The protests are going to continue, and is that the...
They certainly are.
Where's the best way that people can help you guys out? ColeRiverWind.org?
You can go to ColeRiverWind.org, or you can access the Coal River Mountain Watch website. That's ColeRiver@CRMW.net. What's happened on Tuesday is, as a result of 30 people being arrested, we've accumulated about $15,000 worth of funds just on that particular day. Now, this is the second time that I've been arrested this year for nonviolent civil disobedience. And I've never been arrested before in my life. I'm 53 years old, and I'm a mother of four and a grandmother of one, and I've never been arrested in my life. But it's gotten to the point in the Coal River Valley to where we feel as though it's the line in the sand. You know, we've gotten to the point to where we have to ask ourselves, you know, just exactly what are we willing to do in order to try to make a difference. And one of the best things that we're doing is we're trying to raise national awareness, and we certainly appreciate you helping us out with that.
Thank you. I appreciate what you're doing, Lorella Scarborough. Thank you very much. Put Bob Kincaid real quickly back on the phone there. I'll finish up with him. You bet. Thank you. Hey, Bob, I was watching some of these startling videos, frankly, at mountainaction.org. It's getting hot out there. Are the media covering this appropriately, at least locally, Bob Kincaid?
No, they're covering it inappropriately locally, Brad.
In what way? Very quick, because I got to get to a break.
Yeah, to one degree or another, almost all media outlets in West Virginia are owned in whole or in part by some interest in coal. As a consequence, anything they report will be skewed in that direction.
I understand. Boy, we got to get the word out about this nationally. Bob, thanks for all you're doing. I know you're continuing to follow this story. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, where you can tune into Head On with Bob Kincaid. You'll be following this. You're on this story. Thanks for making noise out there, and thanks for allowing me to help.
Oh, Brad, thanks so much for having us on, and you've done a great job all week long filling in for Mike.
I appreciate that, my friend. Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio. You'll be able to listen to his entire program if you're listening on the MikeMalloy.com stream after we finish up here, which we will be doing soon. We have a time for a call or two if you want to try to get in. 877-520-1150. Whatever the hell's on your mind, the first three callers, I'll try to get to all of them. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. With Desi. You're quiet tonight, Des.
Yes.
Why are you so quiet?
Yes, well, no, I thought that they were telling the story quite well. I mean, they're the ones that are living it. They're the ones that know.
Yeah, they are. But we need to make that bang that drum louder to get the story out. It's pretty incredible. All right, Brad in for Malloy. One more segment. 877-520-1150.
Picked up my bag, I went looking for a place to hide.
Few minutes of the Mike Malloy Show on a very sad day. Michael Jackson passed away today at the age of 50, as did Farrah Fawcett at the age of 62. Out here, both of them out here in Los Angeles. All right, final few minutes here. I'm going to try to rip through the phone lines, get through as many folks as I can here. So keep your questions quick, and we'll try to make our answers quicker. Meg, calling from Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to the Molloy Show, Meg.
Hello. I just want to say about the mountaintop mining, I saw first became aware of it in a documentary I saw called Raising Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Raising, R-A-Z-I-N-G, Appalachia.
Gotcha.
I think it explains the situation really well. Also, anybody who isn't familiar with this can just go on Google Earth and look. And you can see big white scars in the mountains, and that's what it is.
Great, great point, Meg. Thanks for raising Appalachia, and we're not talking about hiking the Appalachia Trail like some of those governors out there. Appreciate the call. Thanks for making noise,
all right,
Meg.
Thanks.
All right, let's get down to Tom in Atlanta, Georgia. What's up, Tom?
Hey, I'm real psyched. I'm going to see Bill Maher tomorrow in Atlanta, believe it or not.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I had two quick points about Michael Jackson. I'm 47, and some of the things he did with the Jackson 5 were just stupendous. I'm very heavy-hearted tonight. I was wondering two things. Do you know who's going to get the rights to the Beatles music now?
I don't know that. Whoever inherits his estate.
I think he still owned them.
Yeah, I think he did, but I think he also had a lot of debt, so I suspect those are going to be sold off, and Paul McCartney might want them back.
Buy them.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one more thing real quick?
Quickly.
The governor of South Carolina.
Yeah.
If a soldier did that, they would have went AWOL. So can he have any criminal charges placed against him?
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I understand he was supposed to be away for 10 days, not just 7. No criminal charges. Being governor is a lot easier than being a soldier. Thanks, Tom, for that
doing
call.
Doing a great job. Thanks, man.
Thanks, my friend. All right, let's see. Did I get 3? Line 3. Here we go. Aaron in Pasadena. What's up, Aaron?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was going to come on.
You were on hold for the show. What do you expect?
Okay. Well, I didn't know that, sir.
Right.
I just wanted to say that I think you really sound very informed, and I'd like to know if there's a chance that we can get you on the radio on a regular basis.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate that. Call your radio station, make noise, raise hell, tell them you want some more Brad. I'll be happy to be there. Tell them to pick up the Green News Report, greennews.bradblog.com. You could have me on a few times a week, at least that way, and it's free. And, otherwise, tell them you want Brad, and I'll come in and guest host on your local station.
Brad?
Yeah.
You know, the problem is I don't have access to the Internet. I'm not able to do that. But, and my radio station doesn't seem to answer the phone.
Who's your radio station? Who are you listening to?
KTLK.
K-Talk out here in Los Angeles, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well.
That's the number that I'm calling, which is their usual number for reaching them.
All right. Well, thanks for the thoughts, the kind words. And, send them some email. Maybe they'll pay attention. I appreciate the call. I got to get to the other ones.
All right.
Thanks,
take
brother.
Care. Bye.
Bye. Who are we getting to? Alan. Alan in Miami. I got 30 seconds at most for you.
I think we're all sick of watching how the media distorts everything that goes on. They won't cover the mountaintop removal. They won't cover single-payer health care. You can't. They didn't cover the stealing of the election in 2004. And we have both parties supporting this consolidation of the media. We got to do something serious.
Hey, Alan, we are covering it. We are the media. You are the media. Keep calling those radio shows, making noise, make them tell the truth, make them talk about what's important. All right? Thanks, Alan. I appreciate the call. All right, and our last caller, AC in St. Pete, Florida. You got 15 seconds.
Answer this question, because the FBI lady's not on now.
Quick.
What would you attribute the bond or the glue that holds 9/11 together if it wasn't true that it was a conspiracy? Fraternal, secret societies, or what do you attribute the bond?
I'm not going to answer it, because I only got 5 seconds, and that wouldn't do it justice. We'll pick it up again tomorrow. Thanks to Tony, Desi, Ben Birch, Miranda, Agent 99, and, of course, the Molloys back tomorrow with one more night of the Molloy program. We'll see you then.